If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month, with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.
Top of the morning, afternoon, evening, folks. It's Captain Liam here on the Bridge of Unbridled. On today's Captain's Chat, we've got wonderful to have Alicia Storr here, who's the COO of DSNM, but also the wonderful host of her own podcast, one of the first podcasts in yachting called On the Bridge. How are you this morning, Alicia?
I'm good, thank you. It's actually the end of the day for me. Morning for you, end of the day for me.
Exactly. I can never get used to that.
I'm going to be getting ready for bed in a minute and you're just getting out of bed.
Yeah, I'm looking for my second cup of coffee already. I'm like, and how's things been with you this winter? You're going to see signs of spring so far or?
Luckily, I'm in the UK and we are seeing the signs of spring. We are in our busiest period of the year. So for us in navigation, superyacht navigation, March, April, May is crazy busy, which is brilliant. Touch wood, if it wasn't, then, you know, obviously we'd have a problem. So, yeah, we've got a lot of boats moving. We've got a lot of new builds coming out the yard and a lot of boats that have had refits and things coming out the yard. So, yeah, we're lovely and busy. Thank you. Yeah, it's good.
Well, I think we've just made you a little bit busier with Unbridled Project because you know, you can see the bridge behind me now. So we're trying to go paperless, which the vessel is 2009. We've got the Transis. And for all the audience out there that don't know, DSNM is probably the leader in a lot of different things they do with bridge, superyacht navigation, including Compass, which is a software, yacht management, navigation equipment, and training as well. What kind of resonates with you within that platform? Where do you see the passion projects for you? What do you get excited about?
Oh, well, where do I start? So without sounding boring, everything.
Yeah.
We have two companies. DSNM runs the management side and software side, which is Compass, which is what you and your guys have been having a look at. And then David, my husband, and I, we run the company together. And about 4 years ago, with all our spare time, we thought we'll start another company doing hardware. So about 4 years ago, we started a company called Navigates, and that specializes only on the hardware. So if you were going from paper to ECDIS, we would do the whole thing, replace it, set it up, etc. So yeah, it's fun because we get to build the relationships with the crew and we can do everything. So hopefully once they're a customer of ours and we do a good job, they stay with us normally a long time because we can do all of the charts and the publications, flags, training. And then when they're ready to make the move to digital primary, we can help them with that also.
Kind of like a one-stop shop.
We try to be.
Well, too many times in America, you work with one company who's the chart and navigation, then you have to work with an electronics company, and then you've got to work with a distributor of the hardware. And it's like, this is getting a little complicated. Let's just get the chart out and do the corrections, you know, which is not the way forward.
That is exactly why we started. So we have about 700 boats on management, and we had all these lovely crew coming to us that we'd sort of become friends with. We want to have a bridge refit. Who would you recommend? So we were recommending other companies and hardware distributors, and then they'd fit the equipment, but then they just wouldn't support it afterwards. So we were like, this isn't how we want things to be. We want to pick up the phone when there's a problem. We want to be that person who we're going to help you sort this out. So yeah, that is exactly why we started it. And very fortunately, it's gone pretty well. And we've done some really big jobs, smaller jobs. And yeah, it's great. Like I say, because we can go from the very start all the way through and see it through and make sure that they're compliant and happy. So yeah, it's good.
So let me ask you this though, because Captain Dunedin, I'm 47 now, and sometimes I feel I'm a bit old fashioned in the way I do things because I've done this a long time and I believe in my binoculars and my charts.
That's good. You look out the window, so that's a good start.
Rule number one. That's I always tell everyone, forget all that. You know, the logbook, forget all that. Window first. Because I always thought my biggest fear in life, and I'll be honest with you, was always being at sea in a life raft or a little boat and then being stranded and watching this big super yacht or this big yacht go past and not see me. And like, that's why I train all crew. I'm like, pretend you're the person in the little boat with no, and you're broken down and you're drifting at sea and this big yacht goes by. So your job's to find the little boat. But we've got a lot of technology that's changing things, you know, artificial intelligence and sensors and night vision. What's your advice for an older generation captain? I'm not saying I'm old yet.
I was about to say, be really careful with the old there because I think we're almost similar age.
No, but I mean, as a captain, though, I know myself well enough, and all the crew are saying, Cap, you've got to get that grey beard now and the patch, you know. But, you know, I do see technology pushing things. But I, what's your advice for people that are a little bit afraid of that technology, like connecting internet to the bridge and the connectivity of things? Do you kind of have a natural obstacle?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting subject because we have definitely seen in what we do that there's a generational shift in the age of captains.
Yes.
Not that you're old, but we're seeing captains coming through at a much younger age. And, yeah, I guess they probably would have a preference to using a digital format of charting as opposed to a paper chart. Paper charts still very much are a huge part of what we do. So we've got almost 700 vessels and over 250 of those are still paper primary. Many of the vessels who are fully ECDIS, so they navigate using their digital charting, still carry paper charts just in case. There are also a lot of areas in the world that aren't well charted for digital charting so that people still carry paper charts. And yeah, I mean, I agree. I think not just in super yachts, but in life, technology is moving on, AI is becoming more popular. And I think as a company and personally, we try to embrace it and go with it. But sort of maritime and yachting is so traditional. There's still a lot of traditional legislation. Yes. And I actually, we have a master mariner, George Mills, we work with, and I recorded a podcast with him last week, and we collated a list of questions that crew asked about common, frequently asked questions, debunking a few myths. And I said to him, you know, what common issues do you see with crew on the bridge? And one of them, I think he said, well, they just don't look out the window. Yeah. And we rely too heavily on digital, you know, technology, that actually everyone needs to be trained in both, because actually what happens if it goes wrong? So I think you can have all the fancy equipment in the world, but your procedures and your practices will always be based around the things that you would have learned when, you know, you did your qualification. So don't worry, they won't be getting rid of you just yet.
Oh, I can keep my binoculars because I know we're segueing a lot from what, you know, I wanted to talk about. I really want to talk about the podcast. You know, it's been out 2 years now on the bridge, but we are on the bridge talking. So the final point I want to make, though, is like bridge resource management. And that's where I spend a lot of time, like the relationships on the bridge. When I look at incidences that happen at sea, I see the tension between, a lot of times the reports indicate the tension created on the bridge between the helmsman and the officers. Yeah. That's one of the core factors of the incidences. They don't want to say anything, or they don't agree, or they do agree. And a lot of times when I choose my watch partners for a navigational passage, I put so much thought into the teams. And a lot of times I choose teams that don't get on too well because sometimes they're not focused. Sometimes, you know what I mean? I have to choose a strong officer with a junior crew who needs to learn, and I have to balance those relationships, because it's when you get two people that get on too well, they're just sometimes they're not engaged in the actual problem of navigation, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's really interesting also, because that's one of the things I chatted with our master mariner about, because he'll often go on to do risk assessment and training on a bridge. And he'll speak to the captain before, as long as obviously it's safe, he'll quietly turn off the GPS and see what happens, and see what happens to the alarms go off and the crew have never heard the alarms before. How do the systems work when, you know, that's happened, and how did the crew communicate? And his one main piece of advice of best practice on the bridges, communication. He said he'd been on, you know, bridges where bad things have happened, but the captain had created an environment where the most junior member of crew could say, "Captain, so-and-so is out the window, blah, blah, blah." And the captain would be like, "You know, great, thank you. I can see it, but thanks for letting me know." And
wonderful.
The worst situations were where you're on a bridge where that junior crew member maybe once stood up and said something, and everyone said, yeah, of course, we know it's there. And we're stupid. We don't need to hear it. And then he wouldn't speak again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you say, creating that team, good communication, setting an example that no question is stupid and everyone's opinion is valued is exactly what he said.
Yeah, I mean, I must have been at sea a long time together then. You know, that's what sometimes I feel like years at sea are like cat's years. It adds up. It's like 2-3 years is one. But I'm passionate about it. I love it. And the reason I put so much into junior crew is because I see that's the future. And if I can take a junior crew member on the bridge, and I teach them responsibility of steering, responsibility of lookout. They kind of, they develop these skills that when they go to their courses, they're like, yeah, I was on, I did that. And all the other crew on the course are like, well, our captain would never let us change the radar.
Yeah.
I was like, no, change the radar, break it, do everything you need to do, like learn it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But anyway, but you're creating the next generation, right? Because your junior crew will eventually be captains. And if they have learned in a toxic way and they then take their junior crew on, those junior crew are then... So, yeah, I mean, it's this one big sort of linear line of creating good crew for the future, isn't it? And everyone wants to have a chance. And I think it's hard at sea, right? Because you have, if you don't have a captain that doesn't give you a chance, how do you get that practical experience? And I mean, I could talk all day about it, to be honest. And and I did last week when I spoke to George. Poor George, I think his ears were bleeding afterwards. I had such a long list of questions. But there's so much, you know, nuance around people management. And I think people forget that a captain is a people manager as well as driving the boat. So,
Well, that's what I like about that's what I like about technology, to be honest. Like even AI, everyone gets afraid of it. And I said, it's just a technology. It's a tool, like a pair of binoculars. Yeah. It makes your life better so you can be a human being. So you can, like this morning I chatted to my team for like 40 minutes and I was like, this has been a great chat. But I can afford that time because I've now got systems in place that frees up time for my crew, my chief officer, my chief steward, my chief engineer, to be more hands-on. The systems are more automated, and that's what it gets a passion. Anyway, what inspired you for, you know, on the bridge? Because that's kind of what we're here to talk about. It's an exciting podcast. You've had it for 2 years. It's a game changer. And it's also you giving back to the industry by showcasing, you know, great, you know, guests that you bring on board. But what inspired you to do it in all your free time?
I know. I appreciate that. It's a really very kind synopsis of the podcast, but it was a really selfish reason. I'm a super nosy person and I love chatting with people and I love human psychology. I love hearing people's stories, etc. So selfishly, in the last almost 20 years of being in the yachting industry, I've met lots of amazing people, some not so amazing people. And I just really am nosy to hear their story. So captains or people maybe who were crew and came ashore and created businesses. And through my own experience of building a business with my husband and other businesses, it's really bloody hard. Like it is hard. And I meet these people and I hear their story. And I thought, I really enjoy hearing their story. So surely other people would. And I said we'd do it for 1 year and just see how it went. And the feedback that we got was so interesting because people that I wouldn't have thought would have taken the time to watch or listen to an episode were messaging me and saying, I've known that person for years in the industry, but I didn't know the journey they went through, or I didn't know what their business was. Or so, yeah, it started off selfishly because I'm a nosy neighbor and I want to hear other people's stories. And then it also became a great way for our company to connect with crew because, you know, often we don't meet crew face to face because we're in different parts of the world. So it was a great way to connect. And a lot of people that have been on our episodes so far at the start took quite a lot of persuading because they said, oh, no one's going to be interested in my story and I don't like speaking to camera. So at the very start, I was really trying to think of a way to get a comfortable feeling that it was just two friends chatting. Because a lot of people who've come on, I consider, you know, a friend or a professional colleague. So, yeah, I wanted to make it really just us chatting. And so far, most of the conversations have been really easy to have. So that's a good sign, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I look at it. But what stands out for me to all other podcasts is the quality of the podcast. It's really next level. Like for me, mine's just a simple, humble captain's chat on the bridge with a couple of people. And it's evolved. And a lot of people have said you need to invest in it. And I never really got it until I saw your podcast. And I've heard yours a lot. I've never seen, you know, and then I saw the webpage. I'm like, that's the difference. It's that standard. But for, you know, for me as an active captain on the boat, I just want to, I want to catch people in the moment and hear their story.
Yeah,
you know,
a lot of- I think what you're doing is exactly what we're doing, but we're just fortunate to have a place to sit in one place. But you're doing it, well, I have done a couple on the bridge.
Okay, yeah. But,
yeah, with people on the vessels. But yeah, I mean, ultimately what you guys are producing is the same. You're sharing people's stories and you're doing it in a way that they feel comfortable to talk to you. So it's authentic. And yeah, there are a lot of, I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts and I listen to a lot of audio books. That's how I spend, you know, my time in the car or in the evenings, how I relax. And because of that, I feel like I had a really good idea of what I did and didn't want. And I didn't want it to be formal and, you know,
cold,
sharp. I wanted it to be warm.
And,
yeah, a little bit of, you know, just chit chat. So yeah, we're doing something similar, but just in a different location. And the production of our podcast now is run by a company in the UK, and they do a lot of podcasts and a lot of videography. Two guys from Kindful Creative. They're amazing. I don't want to publicize their name because I'm worried they're not.
Keep your secrets. But, keep your secrets.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And they really are such nice guys, and they actually don't know much. Well, they don't really know anything about the yachting industry, but they've really taken such an interest in all the guests, and they're the ones who create the sort of tone and the vision of the setup. So I do all the research myself. I pick the guests myself because I'm nosy and I like that bit, and create the questions, but they do all of the production and the editing. So yeah, I'm really,
well, I'm honored to have you on because it feels like, you know, meeting a famous person type of thing. And I meet you, I'm like, oh, she's famous, you know. I gotta, you know, maybe infamous.
I don't know. Getting
you to grow a beard. Infamous, yeah. No, I mean, you really have changed the industry because, like you're saying, the people that you interview are really high-end professionals that have really made a mark on the industry and changed it, but you don't hear their stories. And that's the connection I think is really unique with On the Bridge. You really, it's the people behind the scenes that you're bringing out and you're kind of telling their story. Because I think the future of life and, you know, humanity is the experiences we can share together.
Yeah.
And trying to make that connection. The connection, exactly. And it can be done in these formats. You know, that's what I kind of enjoy about it. Like for me, I'm in Seattle here, so I get to speak to someone in England and I'm like, oh, that's fancy. It's a nice way to start my day, you know?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, I mean, I use social media and I like social media, and there's a lot of content now available to us. It's very short form. So, you know, with TikTok and Instagram, it's all about that quick fix. And that's, you know, that's what I didn't want. That's why I wanted us to sit down, have a cup of coffee and have a chat. And actually, it started because I was at Met Show in Amsterdam and we were having a drinks party, and Chris Gartner, who's the captain of Black Pearl, came with his lovely partner Anne, and we'd had a few spicy margaritas, and I said to him, I would just love to sit down and pick your brains for like 5 minutes because of the career you've had. No, he said, no one will be interested. I said, you're joking, you know, big sailing yachts building and captain. And that was 2023. So it took me about 9 months to sort of get it all in place to start. And I only just managed to interview him last year. But
he
was the first person. Yeah, he was the first person I spoke to. And he agreed to do it, but he was traveling a lot with the vessel he was on at the time. And so I managed to do it in Cannes in September. Black Pearl was at the show. They were so kind because the boat was in the show for showing clients for charter. And we had to get on the boat at 8 a.m. in the morning. And we literally had to get everything done within an hour. And all the crew were prepping the boat. They were so kind. So, he was the initial sort of, I wanted him on first. And I only managed to get him on last year. But, that's what sparked the interest. I thought, if I'm interested in this, surely other people will So yeah.
Well, I'm going to go listen to that one after this. I think that'll be a fascinating one. I'm trying to get Duncan Bray on because, like you're saying, for a year I've been trying to get Duncan Bray, and we don't connect. Like we just don't our schedules, and it's like, but one day I'm going to meet these people that I've seen in my career. They've been almost mentors without knowing them. You see them, yeah. They're legacy captains, and you know Len Beck, and the names can keep going, and I'm like, these are legacy captains I just want to meet. You know what I mean? And that's, yeah. I do enjoy it. But Yachting International Radio has kind of changed that a little. They've created a space that a lot of these voices can be heard. How important is that collaboration in an industry like ours where everyone kind of wants their little piece of the pie in a sense?
Yeah. So I met Ria, who has Yachting International Radio, and I got intro'd to her and I had a call with her. We were on the phone for about 2 hours one evening. And what I loved so much is that exactly what you and I've just been discussing, this idea of sharing people's stories yeah. that have changed the industry or have been mentors to people or have gone from one element of being in the industry of crew or something like that and created successful businesses. And when we talked about collaborating, for me, it was a no-brainer because everything she stands for, everything she's trying to achieve with Yachting International Radio, the people that she supports and use the platform, they're all people like, well, obviously you're already there, but they're people like us that really just want to share people's stories and create that community feeling, which goes back to what we were saying about social media has had a place within brand awareness and building businesses. But now we see community, our community WhatsApp group. We have a WhatsApp group with 580 captains on it. We do events to bring the captains together. It's about that connection. And if you can't see your clients every day, what better way to connect with them, sharing conversations directly with them?
Yeah, she's created a wonderful group. But kind of, you know, you're interested in psychology, and I think this may resonate with you. Like social media, I find, is a one-way street. It's a one-way street that slowly affects the way you think and perceive things, whereas conversations like this, they're two ways. They're like, what's your take? And we build a relationship and change things. And that's, like you're saying, with those communities, like the WhatsApp group and the International Radio, these are communities that you don't realize it, but it shifts the needle in the right direction. It takes and it makes people accountable, and transparency is a key.
And it starts conversations that, you know, perhaps the industry needs to have. There's the industry is quite traditional. And although in the almost 20 years I've been in it, there are some really positive changes that have happened. There's still a long way to go. And there's still quite a lot of conversation that can be had. And there's a lot of really great, amazing people who want to do good work. And having these conversations and having podcasts and, you know, the video interviews allows people to connect in a different way. And social media, like I say, has had a really important place, but I feel like we're going full circle actually now. And now we've had our quick fix of, you know, quick content. Now we want something a bit more long form and a bit more meaningful and something sparks a bit of interesting conversation, not just a 30-second video that, you know, you can't even really remember once you've scrolled past. So
exactly.
Yeah, I feel like this is a full circle. We're sort of going back to wanting that human connection.
Very much so, yeah. And it was an interesting journey. But tell me about you. This is your story. COO on the boardroom, you know, from Sunseeker to becoming COO of DSNM. You know, your journey's been quite incredible. Take us back a little bit, if you don't mind, because there's obviously highs and lows and challenges in that. But what's been one moment that stood out? Like, is it a transitional period between companies or?
So I worked at Sunseeker in my very early 20s and it was brilliant. I worked for the brokerage and I worked for a really amazing guy, John Watts, who sadly not with us anymore, but he was great. And I then went and did a couple of other jobs in sort of events and stuff. And I did love the yachting industry, but there wasn't really an opportunity. And then I met my now husband, and he had started DSNM when he was in his early 20s. And his sister was going on maternity leave. Yeah. And he said, would you come and work for the company? We'd only been together a few months. So I was thinking, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work. But I agreed. I said I would do it for 6 months. And then 18 years later, I'm still here. So when I started, Yeah, there was just four of us. I know. Well done for not killing each other, I think, is the important.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There was four of us, and the company had about 30 clients. And yeah, we in that 6 months, we worked well together and it all went, fine. And his sister then came back from maternity leave, and the rest is history. We've sort of just grown from there. So it's interesting in the sense that I've worked with my husband for almost 20 years, and he is my biggest fan. So he literally pushes me. If I come up with some weird, crazy idea and I'm like, I don't know if I can do that, he's like, you can do it. You can do it. And I've had the most amazing support, and vice versa. I'm his biggest fan. The good thing is also we know each other well enough that if we are doing something stupid or, we're a bit out of line, we tell each other. And over the last sort of 10 years, I would say our roles have really separated. So I'm operational. I look after all the staff. I do the hiring, firing. I look after the finances, branding. And he's very much focused on building the software and sort of building relationships with suppliers. So our roles are really different now. And I would say that helps a lot because we don't step on each other's toes anymore.
Yeah, well,
Sometimes.
that's a wonderful success story, and I really appreciate you sharing it. You've kind of, I think the other key is you've stayed away from that brokerage side of things too, which is a very competitive kind of
Yeah, it
cutthroat,
wasn't for
high
me.
stress environment, you know?
Yeah. The experience was amazing and I got to meet lots of lovely people. But what I realized was that sales is not my strong point. Whereas David, my husband, he literally is fantastic at sales. But sales isn't my thing. Organization and sort of planning and forecasting and building the brand awareness was my thing. And so
That
actually, when I
visionary
left,
approach, the visionary.
a little bit, yeah, I enjoy all that part. Whereas the sales, I didn't like the not knowing when a sale might come. You could go 6 months without selling a boat and then sell three in a week. I didn't really like that. So yeah, it worked out well because, as I say, Dave is very much the sales side of things. Obviously, now we have a wonderful team who do sort of all the selling and managing with us. But yeah, when we first met, he was very good at selling, and I realized that wasn't for me.
No, I think I'm the same as you because it's quite funny. I get a lot of these products like they get shipped to me now because of social media and stuff, and like, and arrive back to the boat and I get this product on the bridge and like, Kat, we just want you to do a reel
A
or a post
video,
or something. And I'm like, I drive ships for a living, you know. I'm in the experience business, not the selling business. And even
yeah.
brokers are like, you should become a broker one day. And I'm like, I'm not here. I don't want to sell anything. I sell experiences, and I love when
Yeah.
clients have a good time. Like for me, my moments are when a client is relaxing, they're with their family, they're engaging. That's what I've spent 25 years doing. I can't just switch
Yeah.
all of a sudden and change to something that I'm not that passionate about. Like I love going to
Yeah.
sea. Like I see myself as like 70 with a big gray beard and my old captain's hat, you know, and a little ferry or anything. As long as I'm kind of out at sea, I really get that passion from that, you know, helping
Yeah.
others.
But also, when you're creating and delivering those experiences, the people there have already been sold the dream. They've bought the charter, they've bought the boat. Whereas when we went to Cannes show last year, and we were very fortunate to sort of spend quite a bit of time on a boat we look after and that was in the show for sale. And I have to say, it brought a whole new level of awareness of what the crew go through to sell the boat. I knew they worked hard, but I just sort of assumed that the broker sort of did everything. But the crew were doing tours and they were selling the dream to the people. Look, this is where you'd sit and have breakfast, and these are the experiences we've had. And last summer we did this. And the broker's there and he's sort of chiming in. But ultimately, these crew are the ones that live and breathe it every day. And I had a tote of that and the hand brushing of carpets. Wow. Whole new respect.
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard. I mean, as a crew members, I see them and I'm so grateful for them, but I'm also so afraid because of the men not with the mental health's a big thing for me because I've done so much in my career and I see these junior crew come in and I'm like, look, good luck. It's not easy. You need tools, you need support, psychologists, therapists, you know, wellness days. You need to take time off. You need to call family because it's not fair what they have to go through between one day they're looking after a client or the owner, the next day they're selling a boat, the next day the boat's sold. and it's a new owner and it's a new client.
Yeah.
And that's not normal. Yeah. Like most jobs, you're working for the same owner and after 3 or 4 years, you want to progress or you move up. Yachting's different. Yachting's like next week, Unbridled could be sold. Like you just never know. You know,
well, we said that when we were on board, we were talking to one of, I think he was the second officer, really nice guy. I said, is this weird for you? You're trying to sell your home because you live on board and you're showing people around and you're trying to sell this to them. And if they buy it tomorrow, you might not even have a job.
Yeah, you put yourself out of the job, you know?
Yeah, by doing too good a job selling it. But no, I think there's, I mean, the dynamics now of crew on board is quite different even to when I joined the industry 18 years ago. And on one of our podcasts, actually, I chatted with a recruitment agency that's well known in the industry. It's one of the things we touched on. And they said that they're really, you have to be honest with crew when they come and say, look, this isn't for everyone. It can be the best job in the world if you get a good captain and a good boat and a good, but also it can be really hard. And there's this social media expectation that everyone watches social media or TV programs and you think, oh yeah, it looks so glamorous and it looks so easy and you get paid loads of money. But actually the reality is different, isn't it? You work really hard and okay, you get paid well, but you're away from family and maybe you've never lived away from home before. And there's a whole different thing going on there than just it being super glamorous.
But it's so, also, but it changes quick. Like you can have the same crew and in a week, the same crew that were smiling and laughing together last week are not laughing and smiling. And I'm like, what happened? And all of a sudden I figure out there's some story and I'm like, well, okay, let's address this, people. Let's get past this. We're all
things people just managing.
Yeah,
people managing is the hardest job in the world. I say this, it is the hardest part of my job. Yeah. We have 30 plus staff.
Oh, wow.
You know, we turn over X amount of money and people think that's the thing you focus on. I'm like, no, making money is easy. You find a product that people want, you do it really well. It's finding the good people and keeping good people and keeping those people happy and making them feel valued. And that is the hardest part of running a business is
I've changed a lot of our onboarding process on Unbridled now. We used to have an onboarding process like every yacht where you'd come on board, do the tour, do the safety and then go to work. So we've changed it to more of a corporate structure where it's actually hard to get a job on Unbridled. You know, it's you need to go through a properly vetted system. And then when you're on board, there's a week training or a 5-day training process. And then you finally, you shadow a crew member. Then you finally get your role issued. And it's like, I'm doing that because I want to protect the crew. I want to keep them in a nice, healthy place where they can develop their careers. And same as when they leave, I want them to leave comfortably and progress their careers positively. But I tell you what is hard, show jumping and horses. So how did you get into that world? Because I'm like, I was looking around. I'm like, wow, that's impressive. Like I'm afraid of horses. They're big, powerful animals. I can handle yachts. That's yachts good. Are
Keep
okay.
Keep it that way. Keep it that way. It's cheaper, I promise you. So I've been riding since I was about 13. And then in my sort of 20s, I did it a bit more seriously. Never professional, always just sort of amateur level. But yeah, I used to jump all around Europe and we used to do a tour that started off in Spain and we'd go, it was amazing. And the thing was at the time we had no children. So Dave and I would literally pack up sort of March time and we would just work on the road. The company was a lot smaller then as well. So it didn't need so much of my time. Mm-hmm. But I have horses now. I don't ride as much as I'd like to, but I call it my therapy. So every now and again, I'll say, I think I'm going to give up riding because, you know, the work's so busy and we have a little boy who's 5 and he always says to me, please don't, you're a much nicer person when you know, you have it as your outlet. So I try and ride a couple of times a week. It does mean getting up super early in the morning, but yeah, it's worth it. It keeps me sane. And yeah, it's also taught me a lot of patience and, you know, it teaches you to fail successfully and get up the next day and just get on with it because most hobbies, most sports, tennis, golf, whatever, it's just you. With a horse, you've got a 700 kilo wild animal that you're basically trying to make jump colored poles. I mean, it sounds weird actually when you break it down. And you can train and train and one day you win and the next day you're dumped on the floor. So it has, I would say, made me quite good getting up and being like, okay, what's next? Let's try again.
Yeah, exactly. Let me get into the mind. Like, how do you develop that relationship with a horse? That makes no sense to me. Like, how you get a horse to jump over a colored pole? Like, it really.
Yeah,
you
just, I know.
It sounds you run up to it and lead up. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, so it's like a wild normally, animal.
Yeah, I mean, the ones that we use for sport aren't from the wild. They're bred for the sport. So you know, they're bred quite specifically for the job. And then when they're between 3 and 4 years old, then they're broken in, which means they're sort of trained to have a bridle and saddle on. And then you sort of don't do too much with them between 4 and 6 because their bodies are still developing. And then normally you would start their career sort of 5, 6 onwards. And yeah, you have horses in top level competitions sort of 17, 18, but normally by then, they're sort of dropping down and taking it a bit easier. But yeah,
that's the, I guess. You got to wait 7 years for the horse to be in, you know, wow, that's the patience.
Yeah.
And what's the reward for the horse, if you don't mind mine? Because a lot of, you know, in life, a lot of things people look for a short term reward. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because the horses love it. You see them. It's beautiful.
Well, they do. And actually, if they don't, you can normally tell. Like, people say, it's cruel because, you know, you're making. And I think, trust me, you cannot force them to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if they don't want to do it, they do not want to do it. And I've been on the receiving end of a few of those. And yeah, I mean, for me, I can't speak for, you know, other people, but for me, it is very much about the horse, not just about the sport. So if you said to me tomorrow, you could never go to another show ever again, you could never jump again, you could just have your horses, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
I just think they're incredible creatures. They are super intelligent. They have really good memories. They, you know, when I walk in the barn, the horses hear my voice, they'd be able to recognize my voice. And okay, I do give them a lot of treats, but you know, you do build like a relationship with them. And sometimes, even if I'm not riding, I just spend time with them. I take my little boy, he'll help me muck out the stable. So yeah, that is just, it's therapy basically. It's, I try and put my phone on silent. And when you are, you know, with a lot of crew, all day, every day, your job is to be the person for your crew. And my job every single day is to be there for 30 odd people. When I'm in the office, I'm there for everybody else. And I love it, but it's also, it sort of drains your cup a bit.
Yeah.
And then when I go to the horses, I'm just there. I don't get asked questions. I don't, you know, no one's telling me this. It's just, it's therapy.
But it must be like a zone, like, but you must get into the flow with it when you're on a track and you're racing and the horse knows it and you kind of lose that. I don't know. Like, I used to do a lot of diving with sharks and then I was married with kids and now my kids are getting old. I'm getting back into diving with sharks.
You would have similar, right? Because the risk of death is high. So seeing is the only other thing I've found in life that I don't think about work.
Yeah.
So when I'm riding, they call it having the feel, right, of the horse. So you feel the movement, you feel what they need, what they're doing. Yeah. And skiing is the same. When I'm skiing, I really have to focus on skiing. So I can't think about work. It's the only two things I've ever found.
They're very different for me. It's golf and sharks.
Golf.
Because golf, I'm not very good at golf. And therefore, it puts me in a space where I have to mentally concentrate. Yeah. And then I have to control all your emotions. It takes you in different places where you can't see any hope in life. I'm like, how is this little white ball winning? Like, how is this little, but I'm the one controlling the white ball. Like, it really, I don't know. I enjoy it because it takes me away from the intensity of yachts and demands. And it puts it right down to a grounded walking with a little stick that's shaped funny and trying to get it into a little hole. Yeah. And it just puts me
in my... But it's far more technical. It is technical because my husband plays golf and he's good. And I thought, how hard can this be? So went and had some lessons. And I'm actually okay. I can hit the ball pretty well. I've got my own clubs. But I got home and I said to him, I owe you an apology. I've always thought that, you know, you being good at golf was just easy. But actually, just the grip, the stance. And we've got a couple of really good friends who are professional golfers. And I have such a respect for them in their careers after trying to learn golf. I'm like, wow, okay, it's...
Well, that's the same as horses. No, it's an art. Like, it is an art form because you have to... come up with ideas and your approach. But it's like you're saying, I think in life it's important to take your, you know, your mind in a place where you're not always under those pressures. And I, whether it's horse riding or skiing or golf or sharks, you know, that's your outlet, you know, and it's very hard to do that in such a high stressed world we live in. What's your advice for people, even within your company, though? What's your advice for people in your company or people that you'd like to say, you know, develop their mental endurance in life?
Oh, God. It's hard, actually. Mental endurance, having thick skin, is extremely difficult. I think also being a female in our industry can be extremely difficult. And I grew up in a household with my grandmother and my mother as role models. And my grandmother was the most tough, self-confident, 5'2" Scottish lady you would have ever met. And in our household, there was never a, what if I do this? It was always, when are you going to do it? So I grew up a self-confidence, but also with a mentality that I could actually do anything I wanted. Why couldn't I go to the moon? Why couldn't I be an astronaut? Why wouldn't I be a doctor? You know, it was just a mentality in our household. And in our industry, I meet a lot of women particularly who maybe haven't grown up in that environment. And it is difficult because it is a lot better than it used to be, but there's still very much a sort of difference between opportunity and respect from, you know, whether you're male or female. The other thing is my partner, Dave, is my biggest fan. So I constantly have that support in my life where if I'm trying to do something, well, you'll do it. I know you'll do it. It might take you a while, or it might, you know, there's, I've never actually had self-doubt in myself because I've always had people around me that have shown me. My mum was a single parent. My grandmother was this exceptionally confident person. So I've always had these people, these role models who you just get on with it. You just do it. So I think actually mental strength is extremely hard. It's probably a skill that needs practice and it needs working on. I don't think necessarily it comes naturally, but for me, age also has helped a lot. Because the older I've got, the less I care about what people think. And I think that's quite freeing. So I have this amazing group of friends, small group of friends, and I've got my family. And then I've met all these incredible people in the industry who I would consider friends. And if I meet someone and I think they're not for me, they're not for me.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely fine with that. And obviously I would never want to upset anyone I cared about. So family and friends, I care about their opinion, but that's one interesting thing, putting yourself out there on the internet, like I've done with On the Bridge and my social media. Yeah, you get comments, you get people saying things. And I just think, I look at that person and I think, do I respect you? Would I want to work with you? Would I want to be friends with you? And if the answer is no, why am I going to care what they think? They don't even know me from the start. But yeah, I would say age has definitely helped. My husband says that I have this incredible skill to not care what people think and never hold a grudge. So if I meet someone and they're not for me, I'm good. I don't want to fall out with them, but they're not for me. So
yeah, not care what people think and not have it. Yeah, I think it's great advice because it's...
But it's probably easier to say than, you know, it's easy to say, but perhaps harder to do. But I listened actually to a podcast the other day and they were talking about this and the guy said... He was an actor and he said, how do you deal with negativity on social media? And he said, I think about it this way. If I was walking down the road, would someone just come up and shout in my face, I hate you, you're terrible at your job? No, they would never do that, would they?
Yeah, true.
On the internet, people do it because they think that they, you know, they've got this safety net of the internet. So if you just don't listen or you don't read it, then it can't affect you. So yeah, I think...
I think it's great because, to be honest with you, the other day I probably got my first bit of negativity on social media, and it was just someone saying, who's this guy? Why are you always chatting on social media? You know, you fake or something. Like, why are you always chatting on social media? And I was just and it just stuck with me for 48 hours, and I think now I'm releasing it. So I really appreciate your advice because it shouldn't affect me. But what I do with crew is I tell crew, double down on you. You are the biggest asset you have. And it's not mental health, it's mental fitness. And you need to keep training yourself, you know. And I think that's the, like you're saying, the advice is, you know, you don't just have thick skin, you build thick skin. know, you build it.
You also have, you build as you, and this is difficult, I think, when anyone's starting out, but I am at a point in my career where I know my value. I know what I bring to the table. Like we were talking about it, I'm never going to be a broker. So I'm not going to sit around a table of brokers and try and pretend I know what I'm talking about. But I know what I'm good at. I know what value I bring to the table. And I'm really confident in that, whether it's business, personal life, whatever. But if I don't have faith in myself and I'm not putting advocating for myself, why would anyone else believe in me? And it is really hard when you're younger. But I say, you know, to my staff or girlfriends or whatever, when they're being negative, as humans, we tend to like pick at one negative comment you've got and that stayed with you 48 hours. But if someone writes something nice, do you go to bed at night and think, oh, I've done a really good job because someone wrote something nice? No, we don't. We never celebrate the good stuff. And actually, what's really interesting with the horses is, when about 10 years ago, I saw a really amazing sports psychologist. I had a bad fall and I was really struggling with sort of this self-fulfilling prophecy that I was like, oh, if I make a mistake, it's going to really hurt me and it's going to hurt the horse. And I went to see him for about 6 months and he was brilliant. And he said to me, when you come out the ring, you can pick one negative thing to talk about and you have to find three positives. And first few times it was so difficult because if the round hadn't gone well, I'm not dead. I went through the start and through the finish and the horse is okay. But what it did was sort of reset my mind that you come out the ring, you make a mistake. We all make mistakes. You watch the video back, learn from the mistake. I'm not going to make that mistake again. Delete the video and move on. Otherwise, you torture yourself.
Yeah.
And that's exactly with one negative comment, you've tortured yourself. But what about all the positive things? What about all the conversations you've started, the people that you've connected, the collaborations you've done, sharing people's stories, all the positivity that you've created and achieved? But we don't celebrate that. We just look for that one negative thing and hold on to it. So my advice is just avoid it.
Yeah, delete true. Delete it. Move on with it. You know, it's good because I think people connect for certain reasons at certain times. I'm a little emotional because I'm like, this is meant to happen. This conversation was meant to happen on the line because your strength comes and you're sharing that strength with people. And I think, you know, when people listen to this, they'll build their own inner strength. You know what I mean? And they'll double down on themselves and they'll learn that you don't have that thick skin. You build that thick skin by supporting yourself and being true to yourself. Like, I think yachting, though, you know, I know we need to wrap it up, but I think yachting puts people in their places. And on a yacht, it's very typical. You're the second stewardess. You're the chief stewardess. These are your roles. These are your responsibilities. And we depersonalize the actual individual. And what I think we need to do more is actually, who are you? What's your name? Where are you from? What are your skills? And how do those skills make this environment a better environment? And that's what I'm hoping where yachting comes to, is the personalization of the experience. Because the clients all value the crew, but we give them such a copycat, you know, like standard. We give them this checkerboard standard where I think we bring more beautiful people into the industry from a crew perspective. I think it supports a better experience, you know.
Yeah, but even having these conversations, and you know, we've got a mutual friend in Claire Hagen, haven't we? And I did a podcast with, we talked about ADHD and we talked about how, you know, 10 years ago, most people wouldn't have even known what it was. Now I'm sitting there celebrating her as a creative. Yeah. That is her superpower. If she didn't have ADHD, would she be as great as she was? Probably not. That is what makes her so special. And she is so special and such an incredible individual. But also, I think, you know, everyone learns differently. When we take on a new staff member, I always say to the manager of the department, like, you need to work out quite quickly when that person comes in. Are they a visual person? Are they a practical person? And then you need to tailor the training to them, because I've obviously seen something in them that I think is going to work for us as a company. But not everyone learns out of textbook. Some people, you know, at school failed school because they couldn't learn out of textbook. And the only other thing I was going to say to you was, it's a thankless task trying to please everybody. And the moment you realize that actually you will never please everybody, you are not for everybody, that's fine. And then you just go along in life thinking, if you meet someone and you get on, great. And if you don't, that's also okay, isn't it?
Very deep this for a morning conversation. I know it's nighttime for you. I know you're about to have your wine and, you know, spend time with the family. I'm going to start my whole day here. I've got a whole day ahead of me with meetings for crew and technical conversations. But you really
like
get
I'm
a going to
send in my therapy bill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I feel like it. But that's what I like that because on the bridge, you know, they're the type of conversations I value because they bring depth. Yeah. You know, I think in depth people grow. You know, you grow yourself, you help others yourself. I mean, to me, I don't know, I'm a bit different. I measure success in the service of others, and you can serve others two ways. You can serve them by helping them, or you can serve them by sometimes giving them challenges. And you have to, you know, you have to change your leadership style based on what the person is. And I only found that 2 years ago when I did a leadership course, advanced leadership. And I was like, I never knew that. I thought I had to be the rock solid, not changing person who was black and white, you know, high authoritarian, high structure. Mm-hmm. And now I've learned, no, you need to be Liam. You need to be happy and positive, supportive and creative and help people be the best versions of themselves. And that's success, you know, because everyone's beautiful in their own way. You know,
everyone needs managing in a different way. I've never ever met two people that need managing the same way ever. And the more people that I interview, the more people that I recruit, the more that is just so true. And if you try and fit everyone in the same box, that's never going to work. And then you end up with unhappy people. So, I think actually, I mean, leadership's a whole nother conversation, but I always say to my managers, it's their responsibility to recognize how to get the best out of that person. Yeah. And that might necessarily be how I would get the best out of them. But everyone, you can skin a cat however many ways. Like everyone does things differently, but as long as the end result is right, then it doesn't matter.
Well, it's also the responsibility is on the leader. It's not on the person to perform. It's on the leader to give them the platform to perform the best they can. But we could go on for hours, but I've got to get back to the crew. I know we've got a busy day here.
Do your day job,
Do my job.
I'm going to bed now. So.
All right. You've really made my day. I can't thank you enough for your time. Oh. I mean, I think people know how to get a hold of you, but if not, DSNM, you know, on the bridge. Correct.
Yeah, we're on YouTube, DSNM LTD. Obviously, our website's DSNM LTD. We're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So, yeah, all of the normal channels.
Yeah, and on Yachty International Radio shortly as well.
I know. I'm so excited. So our episodes will be hosted on the platform in the near future, which is so exciting. And we've got some amazing guests that I'm interviewing over the summer. So they'll be coming out sort of over the next sort of 12 months. So,
Are you allowed to name drop or not?
No. I'd have to kill you if I told you my secrets.
Okay, you just have to
subscribe to the channel.
Love it. I definitely will. I'm going to listen to from the Captain of Black Pearl as well. I'm really excited about that one. That'll be my afternoon walk around Seattle, you know.
Well, this one, Chris Gartner one's only a short one, so you can fit in a short one, but I'm hoping to not pin him down. That sounds wrong. I'm hoping to be able to catch up with him in a longer length interview. But yeah, there's some good guests on there. And like I say, we've got some really nice ones coming over the summer. So I'm excited to sit down and chat with them because I'm a nosy neighbor, aren't I? So that's
what we've got to be in life. It's all about human connections.
Exactly.
But I appreciate your time, Lisa. Captain Liam, and once again, thank you. Everyone out there, be safe and connect with others, I guess, is the key for the day. Double down on yourself and connect with others.